Okay, so we're here with Barry McGuigan, who's a new ambassador for Movember, and the Real Face of Men's Health has just been launched, which is a report by Movember's Institute of Men's Health. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm great, Ray, and how are you?
Good,
good. Good to see you again, mate.
Yeah,
you're looking
yeah.
top class, and I was just asking you look so svelte. What have you been doing to keep yourself in shape? And you tell me you run 6 days a week, you brat. You look really healthy.
Well, look, anybody's going to look not so fit alongside you.
huh? That's not true.
Do you still
That's
go true. To the gym? You
no, I work out, you know, 3-4 days a week.
Yeah.
And I do calisthenics and I do I do sort of explosive ergo routines, you know, 20 minutes, 1 minute on, 1 minute off. So I go flat out each minute, alternate minutes. But I only do that, you know, maybe once every couple of weeks or whatever. But, you know, it's just, I've had a start on everybody else. I've trained my whole life. So it's relatively easy to keep weight off. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke. I'm a bloody bore.
Well, listen, I don't drink and I don't smoke either, so there's two of us. Let's party!
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was there any time in your life where you didn't or couldn't train? What was that like?
No. Only when you injured your hands. And I mean, I don't punch anymore. Deliberately don't punch in case, you know, and once I stopped boxing, I said, I'm never going to punch again because it's the biggest mistake in the world to hit the bag, because within a couple of weeks or a couple of months, you think, well, I'm going to do a bit of pad work and then I'm going to do a bit of sparring and then, you know, why don't I give it a go again? But I don't think I would ever have fallen into that, but I just, as a way of ensuring that that was the case, I just didn't bother.
Training. When was the last punch?
Boxing training.
Yes. When was the last punch you threw then?
Oh, God knows.
Was it 2012 then? Was it?
No, it would have been 1989. I retired in 89.
Right.
So right in 1990, I'd done a bit of training and then I said, no, I'm not going to do it anymore for that reason.
Mm.
You know, boxing training. But the interesting thing was I went straight into work for Sky and I travelled all over the country and I, you know, we had the tragic news of Ricky Hatton, but I used to go and to him and all the other fighters that were coming through on Sky Television who I was working for exclusively at that time, and so I'd go and train with them.
Mm.
We would film it and I'd go running with them and that sort of stuff, but I never had the inclination to want to come back, thank God.
Very sad news about Ricky Hatton.
Yeah,
last week. Only 46.
46 years old.
Yeah.
Devastating.
Yeah.
Just you know, unspeakable sadness in the family.
So. Why was it so important for you to be involved in Movember?
Well, my brother died of suicide.
Dermot.
My brother Dermot. He was 34 years old and I was destroyed and still am. And
what age were you at the time, Barry?
I was 32 and a half.
Right.
So Dermot was a year and a bit older than me. And we grew up together and we were inseparable and we watched him and we spoke to him and we implored him not to do anything rash or anything, you know, anything tragic like that, but he done it anyway. So,
right. So it's over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So was he talking about suicide then?
Yeah.
You, was he?
Yeah.
He was.
He talked about it to his close family, you know. So it was we were also, I mean, all of us, I've got five sisters and, well, four now. My sister Sharon passed away a couple of years ago, but we were all just so traumatised by it. It was just a shocking, shocking state of affairs, you know.
Yeah, it's impossible to understand how somebody would be in a place that they feel that death is better.
Yeah. It must be a terrible place to be, you know. It must be, and I'm fortunate, thank God, that it's never happened to me. But I've known it's happened in boxing before. There are countless ones that took their lives. I don't understand it.
Well, people would say, you know, because we know from the statistics in the report that 80%. Of suicides are men in Ireland.
Yeah.
So this report has done research.
Mm-hmm.
The results are here, hoping to influence government policy.
Yeah. It's not just in Ireland, it is a massive issue in England as well. And, you know, the NHS have been tasked with trying to do something about it. And, you know, there's more and more pressure. And, you know, there's been so many problems. And it, I think it is a solvable problem. It is a big expenditure from the health boards in different countries. You know, if we want to stop it, it has to happen, and it has to happen. It is a major, major problem in not just in Ireland, but in England as well, and undoubtedly in Europe as well, but particularly in you know, the two countries that I've grown up in. I see it, I watch it, I look at it, and I think, come on, come on.
You have three sons.
I have three boys. Yeah.
They're into their 30s now, are they?
Blaine is 42.
All right.
Jake is 38. And Shane is 36.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Seven grandchildren who I absolutely, me and my wife, we just adore them. And they're amazing. And
do you fear for your grandchildren, particularly your grandsons? I'm just thinking about all the influences that are available to them that weren't available to us.
Yeah, I worry about it. I worry about, you know, how can you protect people and how can you protect your loved ones? And you just hope that you're, you know, you have a good balanced life between your wife and you, and that you have good people around you, and you're, you know, in the world of show business, it's pretty chaotic, it's pretty crazy. You know, my sons are all in the boxing business. My son Shane trains professional fighters. He's trained 10 world champions already. He's 36 years old. His brother Jake negotiates with television. His brother Blaine selects opponents and is like an encyclopedia.
Family business.
So it's
and where do you fit into
all that? I'm the old codger that's brought in every now and again to have a word with the guys if they're having a difficult time, or to come along when they're sparring and watch them sparring. And if they don't have such a great time, that I say, hey, it's normal. That's what happens, and put my arm around their shoulder. And you know, I'm there to encourage them and just to reinforce what Shane's doing. Shane is an exceptional, one of the best coaches in the world. And I'm not, it sounds big-headed because he's my boy, but I know he is. And the success has been there.
And you were obviously a great role model for them. And your dad, Pat, although he died young, was a good role model. And one of the worries I think that people have is that young men don't have strong role models.
No, that's true. You know, I try to be a dad for everybody. You know, and kind of, you ask me, Ray, why do I go, or what do I do in the gym? I go in and I'm like a dad to them.
Well, that's, you were like that on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here as well. That's your default position.
Well, yeah, I suppose it is. I can't help it. I just do it. You know, when people get upset or whatever, I try to sort of say, hey, come on.
But and I suppose that what impressed a lot of people about you on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, now that we're in that, was your... You got upset and you showed your own vulnerability. How were you with that?
No, I mean, I don't care whether people see me crying. I was crying about my daughter, and I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
I understand that completely.
If people had... If you'd been through my daughter's life and gone through the difficulties that she had... And the battles that she overcame, and the trouble that she had to get through, and the barriers that she had to push away and overcome, they would understand why I get upset. And I don't care whether people like it or think I'm annoyed or get annoyed at me or whatever. I don't care. She's my child, and I lost her, and we'll never get her back, and that is incredibly difficult to live with. That's incredibly difficult. So I understand other families and when they go through what they've gone through. And I lost my brother at 34 to suicide.
Your dad was young.
I lost my dad at 52.
Yeah, your sister to cancer.
My sister to cancer. You know,
Do you get angry at whoever's deciding these things? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely challenges your faith. I mean, I don't know anymore. I don't know whether I believe in anything anymore.
Right. Because you were brought up a Catholic.
Yeah, I was very, very devout all the way through my career. And I have great friends, and you know, like Father Brian is one of my best mates. And you know, I go to the Poor Clare nuns and go down and see them. They're down in the middle of the country now, and I pop down and see them from time. But I haven't been there since I lost my daughter. I just think, I get too upset, so I can't even talk.
No, it is interesting though, because I suppose these things are sent to test us. Is that that's trotted out a lot, isn't it?
I've been tested back to front a million times, and the sadnesses that I've gone through, they have definitely damaged my faith. There was no question about that. I may return to it. I don't know, but it's been a pretty brutal 10 years. Mm. Brutal.
And grief. I lost my mother recently, and it's the first time in my life I've been lucky, I suppose, to get to this stage of my life without.
How old did your mum make?
She was 88.
God bless her. That's great.
Yeah. And it's the first time I've felt real grief.
Yeah.
And I felt the physical effects of grief. And I'm wondering about, you know, so it was 2019, was it, that Danica died?
Yeah, Danica died on the 23rd of July, 2019. Yeah.
6 years ago. So what happens with the grief over time?
I don't know. I don't know. You just go on, don't you? I've got my 7 grandchildren. I've got my 3 sons, and I've got amazing wife, and I've got to go on. I've got things to do. I've got places to go. I've got engagements to make. I go on with life, and I just hope that things will get better. But they certainly haven't got better in the last 8 to 10 years. Have been like tough, from a loss perspective, been awful.
I've often spoke to people who lost loved ones who were on telly or whatever, and Danica was an actor, so there's a lot of her on video. Of course, there's video of everybody now, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch her? Do you?
No, I can't talk.
Can't. No, it's I know. Yeah. I remember speaking to John Thaw's wife years ago. He was Inspector Morse.
Oh, yeah.
And the odd time by accident, she'd be walking through the sitting room and that'd be on. And it'd catch her. And it'd just knock her for 6. And it'd take her weeks to recover, you know.
Yeah. So
grieving is part of life. I don't know how we shore ourselves up for it, how we become stronger in the face of it. I just noticed when I was reading about you, it's 40 years since Loftus Hall.
Loftus Road.
Loftus Road, sorry.
That was,
Loftus Hall is a different place completely.
Loftus Road, 1985, June the 8th, so it's 40 years.
Many people were there.
We had 25,000 people there. We reckon 14,000 came over from Ireland, north and south. Interesting stat, only 4 channels, 19 million people watch it on the BBC.
Right. Was it one of the first boxing matches that they filmed live on the BBC? I think
No. What actually happened was the very first fight that they had shown live.
Yeah.
Lots of the stuff like Cooper and Clay and Fraser and Cooper and Bugner and Cooper. Bugner and Cooper and Bugner then fought Joe Frazier and fought Muhammad Ali. And all of those were filmed, edited and put out as live.
Yeah.
This was the very first live OB.
Wow.
and they got almost 19 million people. And the guy was a guy called Jonathan, what was his name? Jonathan Martin, who was the head of the BBC. It was a phenomenal success for him.
And Loftus Road was near the BBC.
Yeah, it was 400 yards away from it. It was right beside.
They could run the cable.
Yeah,
literally,
if anything went wrong, they could run over.
Yeah.
So it was amazing success. And I thought that was when I beat Pedrosa, Eusebio Pedrosa, for the world title. And BBC Sports Personality of the Year, Fighter of the Year, WBA Fighter of the Year. I won all of the stuff that year. It was amazing.
And what about the homecomings? What are your memories of those?
Incredible. We had 100,000 people in Belfast on the morning that I came in. We came in, so I fought on this on the Saturday. We were going to stay in the middle of the week, but Barney said, no, let's go home. There's a lot of excitement over there. And I said, is there? And so we had no idea that there was this sort of... So we came into Belfast, and then there was like... I think 30,000 people or 20,000 people at the bloody airport. So it was like impossible. Then we went in. By the time we got through that, and then we got the Lord Mayor's car. The Lord Mayor drove out to take me in. And I said, I'm not going in that. I'm going in my brand new red Lotus, which Malcolm Templeton had. So I said, I'll see you in town. So we drove into the bottom of Royal Avenue to the... Belfast Telegraph offices, and we got on the back of this lorry, and with a roped off ring on it, and we drove up through, between 75,000 and 100,000 people in Royal Avenue, and then 2 days later I went to Dublin. 250,000 people turned out to see me. It took me 1 hour and 45 minutes to go from the top of O'Connell Street to the Mansion House.
Isn't that spectacular?
Isn't that incredible?
That'll never happen again.
It was just unbelievable. Yeah. And I remember the guys come back after the football when they done well in the Europeans or whatever, the Irish team. And
Italia 90.
Yeah, it was Italia 90. Yeah. And they had a parade for them in O'Connell Street. But I have to say, without being boastful, it was nothing like mine. it was great. Amazing time. So I have that in my memory bank, you know.
Yeah, and you draw on that, obviously.
Absolutely. It's lovely, and you know, and I'm still sort of.
Is there a moment from then? Is there a moment when? Did you have a quiet moment, say, in a dressing room on your own, where you went, wow, look what I've just done? Was there any moment you can remember like that?
I think we were all saying, you know, this is amazing. You know, you've just the fight, because all of the things just came together. It was, you know, Belfast, which was the only part of Ireland that had successful professional boxing. The South had some professional boxers, but they either had to go to London or travel north.
Mm.
So professional boxing had never been a success in the South. And then we had Charlie Nash, who was in the late 70s and beginning of the 80s. But when I came along, we suddenly got massive support, and it was the Ulster Hall, 2,000 people, and then we banged that out about 5 or 6 times, and then we said, look, let's bring it back to the King's Hall, which hadn't been, they hadn't put any boxing there since the late 50s, early 60s. And then we just crammed that, and then we put on loads of shows, and it was building momentum and momentum, momentum. And then, of course, I went over to Loftus Road, because Pedrosa wouldn't come to Belfast. He said, I'll fight him, but I'm not going to Belfast, which was a sensible thing to do, because we would have had to put it on in a football ground. But anyway, it would have been hugely intimidating.
And it wouldn't have been on the BBC, probably.
There you go. Back then we had 4 channels.
Yeah.
And we had Channel 5 just about to start, or Channel 4, I'm not sure.
Did you ever meet Muhammad Ali?
Several times.
Did you?
Yeah. Never, sadly, in his lucid days.
Yes, yeah.
He was a shadow of his former self when I saw him and chatted to him, which was sad.
You must feel very lucky that you came through your professional boxing career unscathed.
Ray, I made sure I was going to get out of it unscathed.
You can't be sure.
No. But what I'm saying is, you can't be totally sure, absolutely. But what I said was, I'm not going to hang around. And, you know, I used to say, why is this guy still doing it? Mm. Why are they?
Why?
You know,
why? What's the answer to that? Is it money or?
It's well, you know, some fighters, champions, find it almost impossible to walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
They just can't, they can't do it.
It's their life.
Their whole life was centered around boxing and getting ready for fights, and then the drop afterwards, then the preparation again, and you're reaching the top of the mountain, then you're dropping off again after you've won. And, you know, and even when you've lost, it still is, you know, you're in the centre of attention and all of that sort of stuff. So,
do you ever think about your life if boxing wasn't in it?
Yeah.
What do you see?
I would have been in the same business as my dad. I'd said I would have gone down the music business because I've got a good voice, and I would have gone down that route.
Probably. He represented Ireland in the 1968 Eurovision Song Contest.
Correct. Yeah. He won the Castlebar Song Contest, and there was the Irish Song Contest. Then he went and represented Ireland in 1968, the year that Cliff Richards didn't win, with Congratulations,
yes,
which was written by an Irish guy,
Phil Coulter. There you go. Probably one of the best songs that never won.
It should have won, really. Yeah. Dad came fourth. And, you know, he was a big star and he, all over the country. And then he toured with several show bands, Cecil Kettles and the Skyrockets with Pat McGuigan and the Big Four. And so, you know, he was a very popular guy and travelled all over the country. And your
mother sings as well.
My mum is in the choir still.
Yeah, my mother led the choir at home.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, my dad couldn't sing.
Right, so, okay.
And we got his jeans.
Okay.
you would sing in jeans on both
sides. No, my mum and dad can sing, so yes, I can hold a tune. Not as good as my dad, but I can. I'm a quite decent singer. Don't play any musical instrument, right. But I, you know, if I hadn't a box, I probably would have focused on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what I would have done. You know, I can say, oh, I would have gone back to college and done this and done that. The reality is I probably would have been in the entertainment business because my dad was in it and I grew up with it, and all the boys in the band would meet at our house and then rehearse down the back, and I'd go down and sing with them sometimes. And then I used to sit there thinking, wow, that just sounds like, when I would be outside the shed at the back of the house in the yard, and it just sounded like the record. And I think, that's amazing. So I was really enthused by that. So,
and does music still give you a joy?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, yeah. I love it. And I'm a big fan. And, you know, Cian is here today, and a great singer. And, you know, Brian Kennedy's a really good friend of mine, amazing voice. And I'm a friend of Van's. And
you are not, are you?
Well, I'm a friend of Van's.
Yes.
But
he celebrated his 80th birthday.
I know that.
And we celebrated by playing clips of his, like, just his back catalogue. What
incredible.
A genius.
Jesus, oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing talent. What a, you know.
Were you ever in a room where he sang? Just
like, oh, I went to see him, like, because Brian.
No, when I mean, when not.
Oh, just
not,
on his own.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he does that.
Does he not?
No. I don't know him well enough to know that. But
listen, Van, I'll sing one if you sing one.
Exactly. But I don't think he probably doesn't do that.
That. Yeah, yeah.
I would imagine he doesn't need to because he's such a superstar.
Yeah, yeah.
But what a songwriter! So many
very
just
special.
Amazing.
We punch above our weight when it comes to.
Well, we
singers,
come to singer songwriters, musicians.
Amazing.
Hosea, yeah.
You Too, of course.
You Too, Bono and the Boys are just unreal.
Spectacular.
And, you know, you can go on and on. Poor Sinead was so amazing. Yeah. And
just back to Movember. So that I wouldn't call that a moustache that you have there.
No, but I never been able to grow a moustache, you see. The thing, maybe you can, but
I can.
They used to laugh at me. My father used to say, you know, the problem is, Barry, it won't grow in the shade of your nose. And only he could get away with that. But
how many times has your nose been broken?
Oh, so several times. I mean, there's no bone there. So
isn't it?
They took the bone out and they put a plastic bone in.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just...
It suits you, though. Your nose suits
you. Well, it's relatively straight if I just stop picking it. But yeah, so it's lying off to the Kildare side a little bit. But apart from that, I'm okay.
What's that? I've never heard that expression before, lying off to the Kildare side.
It's lying off, you know, just a slightly this way.
Because I'm from Kildare, you see.
Yeah, exactly, that's what it is.
Oh, yeah,
I'm just talking about the geographical position.
Yes, somewhere, yes.
So it's going left, you know, if you're looking down on Ireland. Yeah. It's acting, in fact, going right.
So Movember has been going, I didn't know this, for 22 years.
Yeah.
And they're worldwide, mm-hmm. and they're funding
started
research.
Started in Australia.
Yes, yeah.
Massive funding. But, you know...
And they're intending to spend 1.2 million in Ireland in the coming years. Yeah. 1 million on research.
They need to spend three times that.
Yeah.
They need to spend three times that.
Well, they're hoping that the government
will match. And 10 times that in England.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's great. It's a great start, and I'm glad that the Irish government have said, yes, well, you know, we're willing to talk to you, we're willing to embrace you.
Mary Butler is the Minister of Responsibility for Mental Health, and she has earmarked 2 million for therapies particularly targeted at men.
Yeah.
You know, so the things are going in the right direction.
I mean, look, I'm not being facetious. It is a great start, but it is a monumental problem, and it's growing every year. And it's getting worse. And, you know, it's not just about suicide. It's about men with cancers and with incurable diseases, and not just incurable, they're actually really heavy issues.
Because the report does deal with, and it's been said so many times, I would have thought things have changed, but men are reluctant to come forward and talk about problems, medical problems, with anybody.
Yes.
Because they feel it's showing vulnerability, weakness.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, there is, in some way, it's an unmanly thing to do, is to talk about things
that
are worrying.
Yeah.
Pardon?
I thought
that too.
Yeah.
But it hasn't.
Yeah.
And it's not just here. It's in, where, and I'm over in the southeast of England for the last 35 years. So it's a major problem over there too. So it's just men not wanting to talk about issues that they feel in some way, as you say, that they're being weak, or that they're being unmanly by talking about it. When it's just, that's just so silly, so stupid. They've got to talk about it. You have to speak to people. You have to let the steam off. You have to say, look, I need a bit of help here, and I need you to get me back on the straight and narrow, because so many.
Do you mind me asking if you've asked for help? Have you asked for
help? I've been, because I have no issues talking to people. I am very lucky that I've, you know, I've got, and my brother couldn't do it.
Yeah, crushing yourself.
It's so devastating for all of us, and for him, and for.
And I think the important thing is, if we encourage people, as we do, to talk, then there have to be services when they decide to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I think, some of the problem is that, okay, people are going, you have to talk about this, but there have to be the therapists.
But you have to keep it up.
Yes, yeah.
You have to keep it up, because unless you encourage them to do it on a regular basis, they'll stop.
Yeah.
And it'll go right back to zero again, you know?
Well, listen, it's brilliant that you're the face of this, Barry McGuigan, and you're the type of person that people listens to. And you're a role model.
Thank you very much
for spending the time with us today.
Really appreciate it. Thanks
Barry.
Ray.
Thank you. And if you've been affected by anything we've discussed with Barry today, you can go to rte.ie/helplines, and there's a list of organisations there for you to contact. Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.